Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on an independent journalist and writer from Canada. He is only 20 years old, and he is a fantastic writer, so really happy to have him on the show. This is Rav Arora. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Zuby. Great to be here.
No doubt, man. I've done a brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar with you and your work, please tell them a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm a journalist, and I usually write about issues relating to crime, identity politics, social issues of various kinds relating to things like critical race theory or intersectionality. But mostly I write about the homicide rise in the U.S. and the toll that's taken in various inner city communities across the country. And lately, I've been writing more and more about vaccine mandates and child vaccination, vaccine side effects, particularly myocarditis in young men. So I write about many things, but I tend to pick the issues that are most undercovered in the media and try to give an honest opinion and interview people who I think are competent and credible on these issues, and then provide this information that I feel like many people are missing out on because the mainstream media is just so skewed in one direction in so many of these issues.
I hear that, man. Before we get into some of these topics, tell me a little bit about how you got into the world of writing. As I said in the intro there, you're a young man. So what was it that drew you to taking on all these topics, especially in a climate where a lot of people twice your age or even three times your age are afraid to even broach them?
Yeah. So in the aftermath of George Floyd last year, I saw that we were headed in a totally misguided direction with respect to race relations and the criminal justice system and the police. And I just felt like society was disintegrating in many ways. And so at that point, I decided to write this article on the fallacies of white privilege and the dangers of identity politics. And so I wrote that up. That was really my first major piece. And I sent it over to the New York Post, and they were interested in it. And so they published the article, and it ended up going pretty viral, and a lot of people were reading it, which is amazing. And then from there, I just kept on writing more and more about social issues, racial issues, and publishing in City Journal, Colette, the New York Post, the Globe and Mail, the national newspaper here in Canada. And I think in terms of fearing backlash and the buzz that's generated online from airing these contrarian views, I think that at a certain point you become sort of it's sort of like natural immunity. It's like you gain, mm-hmm. You get infected by you lose your friends, you lose social media followers, you lose certain people who are on the other side of the fence who just think what you're saying is totally misguided and dangerous and racist and offensive. And that definitely hurts. And I've written about this before, about just losing many friends from high school. Many people who I consider to be very close friends and allies were suddenly turned on me for airing totally innocuous, common sense views. Like, we shouldn't defund the police. We shouldn't judge each other based on immutable characteristics. But after that period of infection, if you will, after you get attacked by this social pathogen and everybody wants to dissociate with you, then it kind of just becomes part of your identity, and then you no longer fear writing about these things. So, you know, I've just gotten to a point where I just kind of write whatever I want. And definitely I would say I've been surprised when writing about vaccine mandates, that seems to have generated another backlash among people who were, like, many people who were open and agreeing to my writing on racial issues. Now, when it comes to vaccine mandates, now they're just not interested, and they find it to be totally reprehensible or just anti-science, dangerous, whatever it is. So it's really surprised me how the COVID era has just transformed people's minds and has led to so much division among people.
So the first piece that you had go really viral was the one that you did last year following the George Floyd incident. Prior to writing that, were you expecting such a response, both in terms of support but also backlash? Is that something that you were mentally prepared for, or were you quite taken aback by how it was received?
Yeah, no, I wasn't really prepared for that. I guess I never thought that so many people would read it. And it just happened to be the case that hundreds of thousands, last I checked, if not millions of people were reading that article. And so it just totally surprised me and just shocked me in many ways that so many people were, you know, I think many people were just looking for a bit of a change in the media. And that was a very kind of refreshing tone that I took in that article, writing about these things in a way that you wouldn't normally see in the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Atlantic. But in terms of the backlash, I wasn't really anticipating anything. I was really surprised the way certain people responded. You know, certain people, like, I thought there was a trust, a mutual trust, a deeper friendship that transcended any kind of political or ideological division. But clearly that wasn't the case. Clearly some people prioritize political affiliations and ideological viewpoints over these deep social and in some cases familial bonds for other people, with certain families that get torn apart due to these things. Like, I know friends who are against vaccine mandates, or, you know, they just don't want to get the vaccine for whatever reason, legitimate or not, and their families have been just severely divided along this thing, which shouldn't really matter, right? You should be able to love each other. You should be able to get along despite these things. But it's just, I guess this is just what happens when just so many people are convinced that something is just so dangerous and such an existential and health risk to everybody without understanding any of the, and, you know, well, you know this certainly, and we can talk about this, but, you know, obviously the risks that are stratified by age and various risk factors and health conditions, like people are just not aware about so many of these nuances when it comes to something like COVID, and they're painting broad brushstrokes. And if you're not on their side, then you're the oppressor. It's kind of the same cycles that we see, like oppressor, oppressed, black versus white, you know, white versus people of color, straight versus LGBTQ, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. And we know those definitions are changing, obviously, when it comes to vaccinated. You know, soon double vaccinated people won't be considered fully vaccinated people. So it's just creating more and more, division. And it's just really unhealthy for our society.
Mm. And what role do you think the media has played in all that?
Yeah, well, the media, they just have the incentive to create the most amount of fear when it comes to these things. It seems to be, whether it's police brutality, which we know is rare, which we know doesn't just happen to black people walking on the streets. It normally happens to, like, when we talk about police shootings, we know almost every case, with a few exceptions, which are horrible and police make mistakes and there are bad cops and all of that. But for the most part, it happens to people who are violently resisting arrest, people who have a long violent history, who, you know, the police check up on them and they're just totally defiant, and they're not obeying commands, and they're doing things that are dangerous in that case, and police decide to shoot or do other things. And so we know that, like, that's a rare problem, but so many people look at that, and then the media, they just magnify and hyperbolize that issue And then so people think that it just happens all the time, when in reality, it's so incredibly rare, more rare than a lightning strike in that specific case. And same thing with COVID, right? It's we know how age stratified the risk is. We know that if you're a healthy person under the age of, let's say, 40, but even like 50, if you're a healthy person with no comorbidities, and you know you're exercising regularly, and you're taking care of your diet, and you're supplementing on vitamin D and all these things, you have an extremely low risk of ever being hospitalized with COVID or dying. But there just seems to be like people just look at these aggregate numbers. It's the same kind of like statistical manipulation that you see with like police brutality statistics, where here with COVID, it's like people present numbers like, oh, 90% of people in the ICU are unvaccinated, in you know, certain statistics that I've seen. But it's like, hold on, okay, how many of those people were obese? How many of those people were over the age of 60? Then when you break it down, it's not people in the ICU are not healthy 30 or 40 year old people with no comorbidities. It's older people and people with underlying health conditions. But once you only control for vaccine status, you get these very skewed outcomes. Similar in the way if you look
only in some places as well. I mean, there's places, I said only in some places and at certain times as well. There's places where 90% of people in the ICU are vexed.
Yes. Right?
But either way, that in itself as a univariate, it doesn't tell you the full picture, right? That's not telling you everything. And then what's even considered vaccinated varies depending on where you are. In some cases, what they'll consider someone who's only had one shot unvaccinated, or if they've even had two, but it hasn't been 2 weeks, so on and so forth, depending on the city, the locality, the country, all of these things are counted very differently. And something that's really weird and interesting with all of this that you're saying is that people seem to be far more interested in the narrative than the truth. And I don't know if this is something that's, I guess it's always existed to some degree in humanity from what I know about history, but certainly in my lifetime, it seems like now more than any other time I remember in my own life, people are almost afraid of the truth or offended by the truth. Like, you're not supposed to tell the truth. Even though you are a writer, you're a journalist, people don't really want you to tell the truth. People get angry at you for telling the truth. You could quote a statistic or have something with very clear data, and people get mad at that. So what do you think is going on there? How do you think our society's reached this level in the UK, in Canada, in the USA, in Europe, in all of these different countries, where the truth itself is considered controversial or something that must be buried or hidden?
Yeah. I've been asked that question before, and I do struggle with that. I mean, there's just so much going on. It's there is a kind of religiosity when it comes to politics, social issues, and approaching the truth, where it's, you know, similar to if you meet certain Christian fundamentalists, let's say, for example, and you know, they're super nice, compassionate people, but like they say, like, you know, Jesus is the only way to get to heaven. You know, this is the only way. Or you meet people who are Hindu or Muslim, and, you know, they say their religion is right and everybody else is wrong, right? Like, that's just a fact, right? No matter who you talk to, although there are many people, and I would somewhat consider myself to be in this category of more sort of universalist type people who sort of have a belief about like perennial truths and there being this deep mystical realm that sort of transcends religion, and this mystical realm manifests in different religions and there's more in common than we think, etc. But similar to how religious fundamentalists view that they are right and everybody else who doesn't follow their own, not only their religion, but their own reading of the scriptures. Like, so, you know, you even see division within religions, obviously leading to so much violence and so many wars throughout history. But similar in that way, you see that with the media, you see that with COVID, you see that with racial issues. Like this is the way you have to do things. Like, the vaccine is the way out of the pandemic. like Jesus is the way, you know, to get to heaven, you know, view like this is the one way of doing things. And so you see that same kind of religious thinking, which in this case is just so toxic, you know, like the vaccine is the only way to prevent COVID transmission, you know, even though we know that's very ineffective. And in various other ways, you see the same pattern manifest. And it's just, people are just so close-minded. I mean, I like to use the religion analogy there and think of why like certain people think that all the other religions are wrong or all other interpretations of their own religion are wrong. And it's just that they're just so convinced that they're right. And so with COVID, just so many people are convinced that there is a massive existential lethal risk to COVID, associated with COVID to everybody, mm-hmm. that you have to get vaccinated, and not getting vaccinated means that you are a sinner. You're damaging society in some way, and you deserve to be locked down. And, you know, we can talk about what's happening in Europe with so many crazy authoritarian and full on tyrannical policy measures that are being implemented that at the beginning of the pandemic, I was very skeptical. I was hesitant to use the word tyrannical or authoritarian. Like I was early on, I was very much in the mindset of like, holy crap, that there might be a 7% infectious fatality rate here with COVID. And oh my God, we have to lock everything down. And all that made sense to me. Mm-hmm. And even a few months afterwards, once we knew that it's not 7%, it's closer to, you know, whatever 0.001% fatality rate. Even then I was like, let's not like jump to, interpreting lockdowns as authoritarian or whatever. And a lot of my conservative friends at the time were like, no, Rab, this is going to be forever. And this is authoritarian. I was like, no, come on, like, shut up. Like, stop like listening to Alex Jones. Like the government's not that crazy. Turns out I was wrong. My interpretation was wrong. And here we are. A lot of people are like, Rab, I told you so. And I was like, yeah, I fully admit it. I was just totally wrong. I just underestimated
I was gonna say, Rav, but what you've just said there is powerful because so few people are willing to do that. And I think that's a big part of the problem, right? It's this hubris, it's this ego, it's this unwillingness to say, hey, I was wrong, you know? Like so few people, whether you're talking about the public health officials or the politicians or the average Joe or Jane in the street, most people don't want to go, okay, I was wrong. Those people maybe who I thought were being conspiracy theorists or who I thought were crazy or were too skeptical or whatever, okay, maybe they had a fair point. And people don't want to do this. I think a huge problem we have in society is just lack of humility. Lack of humility, right? I mean, look, everybody likes being right. We all want to be right. Of course, every belief that we have, we think is right. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. And so it's natural to want to defend your positions. But also, it takes a lot of character. And I massively respect people who are able to take in new information and just go, okay, I'm going to update based off of this new information. And time goes on and people learn. And I think that there are millions of people who are still operating. You were talking about how when this whole thing started, you know, you were afraid there could be potentially a, you know, 7% infection fatality rate. I think in some sources they were saying it was as high as, you know, 4%, 5%, 6%, so on. But a lot of people, even though we're almost 2 years removed from that now, people are still behaving and acting off of that initial information. The way people are responding to this is if it's a 7%. IFR, which we know it's not. It's not even remotely close to that. But people don't want to admit that. It's very strange. I also think there's an interesting psychological thing here, which is maybe similar to the concept of anchoring in sales, which is that the first thing people hear and are led to believe kind of becomes an anchor. So that's their reference point. So even if new information comes out of that, it's hard to get them out of that initial belief. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if at the beginning they had said, I don't know the official number. I know it massively depends on demographic, but if they had said, I don't know, 0.15 IFR rate or whatever, rather than 5%. If that had come out like early, then I think that would be the sort of software people are generally operating on. But I think because people were so scared so early, and some people were seeing the propaganda videos coming out of China, people dropping dead, this and that. And so that sort of level of fear and hysteria that was set in them back in February, March 2020, even though it's now December 2021 as we record this, there's still something in them that is still stuck on that previous information. I mean, everyone who wants to be vaccinated has now been vaccinated multiple times by this point, but people are still, there are people who are more scared now than they were 18 months ago, or just as scared, which doesn't make any sense at all from a purely rational and logical and scientific standpoint. But as you said, we're now running on pure emotion. And, you know, I've used the religious analogy before. These days I'm more, I call it more like a cult, with the way people are cutting off their friends and their family and this and that. I think it's closer to a cult these days. But that's really the realm of psychology that we're in, rather than rationality and logic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot there that was interesting that you just said. I do prefer the religious analogy in this case, because it's sort of a COVID theocracy, if you will. Like, cult implies that it's a fringe group. Religion implies that it's a bigger group that dominates to some extent. And with COVID, we know it's not the hysteria, the fear of COVID is not just on the fringes of the far left or the far right. It's mainstream science. It's mainstream perceived science. And I hate the way people use that word, science. It's, there's a term out there that somebody coined, like scientism, you know, this kind of religious approach to science. You know, like, it's, yeah, I think, I think I should write about this at some point, the religious overlaps here. But it very much operates in the way that a religion would operate. And I'm not actually atheist or anti-religious in the slightest. I'm just not committed to like one faith in particular. But it's religion sort of operates on like, this is the truth that we know, and you have to take it at its word. It's not about evolving or updating it necessarily. It's about like, this is the way it is, and there's different interpretations of it. But it's not about every 100 years the scripture is going to evolve and transform. But science, on the other hand, is about that. It's like, you're told something, this is a hypothesis, this is something you've studied. Now it's a matter of testing that over and over again and disproving old ways of understanding particle physics or the way viruses propagate, and then figuring out new ways of how these things actually function through the use of new technology and all these things. But it's like, we've held on to some of these very rigid ideas about COVID, and this fear is just like embedded within the psyche in a way where it's just like this like deep trauma in a way of like COVID, oh my God, like this is a real risk. And like getting rid of that is just so difficult. It's a kind of like some sort of a COVID PTSD or something. Like people are just traumatized by this thing. And you're right about humility too, by the way. Like, this is why I encourage people to engage in, you know, over the pandemic, we saw so much decline in just sanity is one way of putting it, but we saw people's intuitions and their reliance on so many of the institutions in society just disintegrate. And that was just so, it just created so much stress and anxiety and depression and existential angst about the future, about like what's going to happen, and like all these like big picture questions. So I encourage people early on to, like, if you're interested, like go to the church or go to the temple, or for me it's like doing meditation, or, and you know, we can talk about that later if you want, about psychedelics and other spiritual things. But it seems to be that there is a spiritual void, that there is a void of meaning that people are filling with this new COVID religion.
Yes, there's a lot of interesting stuff there, man. I mean, human psychology is such a fascinating thing, and as frustrating as this whole past 22 months or whatever it's been by now has been, it's really been a masterclass for those who choose to pay attention in terms of learning about both individual and collective
human psychology, because the behavior we've seen has just been, it's so interesting. I think anyone who's looking at this purely in the realm of virology or epidemiology is totally missing the main science at play, which is psychology. And I believe that the powers that be know that, the media knows that, the governments know that, the people policing this know that. And it's really just playing off of human psychology. It's playing off of tribalism. I think it's also playing off of, as you said, you know, you've touched on the meaning and purpose aspect. I think also the community aspect. And I also think that I think a lot of it is also about social status. As we know, human beings are social animals, and we strive for social status. And one way that you can elevate your status is by doing something that is genuinely virtuous, genuinely courageous or impressive, or a feat of athleticism or something creative, doing something that benefits your society and your community and so on. So I think that that's been a big part of the mask cultism and the vaccine cultism. This is not saying everyone who wears a mask or takes the shot is participating in the cult, but the people who virtue signal about it and who never shut up about the mask and the status and this and that. And also another way to raise your social profile is to try to demonize or push down other people, right? So screaming at the people who aren't wearing the mask or the people who are not taking the vax or doing this or that. I think this is, again, I don't know whether or not people are doing this consciously, but I think they're jousting for social status, right? So the person who's there, who's triple vaxxed and double masked, he is, in his mind, he's a better person, first of all, but also he's kind of above you, right? He's above you because you're not doing that, and you're not, and even if you are doing it, you're not shouting about it, you're not evangelizing as hard as he is. So this comes back to that religious angle. So you are, you know, he considers himself above. And I think that if you look at the people who really get into this kind of behavior, in many cases, honestly, it's people who are pretty low status, right? They're people who haven't really achieved anything impressive or like done anything. They're not strong, they're not bold, they're not courageous, they're not creative. They're just like, oh, I can just do this thing and all of a sudden I'm a hero. You know, I remember early on when you had people saying things like, oh, this is our generation's World War II. And I'm like, man, if that's true, then we really are the softest generation in the world. Because I see footage of World War II and I'm like, holy crap, man. Like these people are bold and courageous. Now people think that, oh, you know, sitting in your home for a year with, you know, a mask on and not going outside is on the same level as storming a beach or fighting in trenches or, you know, facing the Blitz or whatever it is. So it's all interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting ideas and writing that is coming out of all this, and also will. I think it, for the future, I think people are going to come back to this period, just like we look at history. I think people are going to really psychoanalyze everything that was going on here, especially when the emotions calm down and it becomes less taboo to do so.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you see more and more vaccinated people and people who are sort of following the status quo now wake up and realize that the double vaccination was not going to end the pandemic. I mean, it should have ended the pandemic in that the people who are at risk of actually dying or getting hospitalized, for the most part, although that seems to be somewhat changing, but it remains true that if you're over a certain age and, you know, you're at risk of death from COVID, you get double vaccinated. Like my grandparents, who I encourage, you know, get the vaccine because they were overweight and had heart conditions and diabetes and so many problems. And I was like, okay, you need to get this. And then, and then they were hesitant, but I was like, I feel like you need to get this. And they did. And, you know, no side effects, which is good. And, you know, now I'm not worried about them. But it's incredible to me how just the double vaccination, the whole vaccine campaign was not enough. It's still not enough. It's not like we know that the people who get it, they're now their risk of dying, you know, let's say the people who are at risk over the age of 50 or 60, now their risk of dying has been significantly reduced due to their vaccination status. And that's good. And so now we should go back to normal. The people who are at risk, they've had the opportunity to get the vaccine and, you know, to protect them, that, you know, good for them. But for the rest of us, I still don't understand what the point is of still locking down and having vaccine mandates. I mean, we know the vaccines don't stop transmission. And after about...
Sorry to jump in there. Have you seen the new Twitter policy on this?
No.
That they made this month? They updated their policy on this very quietly. Really? Very quietly. And included in that is you're not allowed to make claims that the vaccine does not stop transmission.
Really?
Yeah. After we finish talking, I'm going to send you their new policy. They updated it less than 2 weeks ago, and it is scary. It's like Ministry of Truth nonsense. Like, there's stuff there that is factual, very verifiable, factual. And it's in their policy that you're not allowed to say it, or like it's under their category of misinformation. I don't know if and how they're enforcing this, but it's actually really concerning. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, no, that makes no sense. I mean, there's no need to even go into any examples. This is common sense. I mean, there was just to say like one example, there's a top NHL team, National Hockey League team, the Ottawa Senators. They're 100% vaccinated, and 40% of their team just tested positive for COVID like 2 weeks ago.
Like, I know, even with the whole Omicron thing, right? Like, everyone who got it initially was vaccinated. It's very weird. I mean, the CDC is open about that. Even Lord Fauci himself is open about that. The NHS over here, etc. But it's in the Twitter policy that you're not, that is misinformation. So that's just, I'm just bringing that up to show how weird this whole thing has become.
Yeah, no, that's just, wow, that's insane. Now I'm gonna you've given me a headache. Now you made me work. I'm just constantly, this COVID stuff just drives me crazy, because I think like now it actually affects my life. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, when it was lockdowns, like I'm already like a, you know, a writer at home, you know, like mostly, and you know, I don't really like that about myself. I do want to, you know, get out there more and do more exciting things, but I was always sort of in the home, you know, reading, writing, studying, you know, working out and whatever. And gyms were closed at the beginning, but then they were open again, so that was fine. And so I was like, okay, if we're doing lockdowns based on the precautionary principle that we're, you know, we're just saving COVID lives, preventing COVID deaths at all costs, like, okay, fine, let's do it. And then I got to a certain point where it's like, there's no end to this stuff at all. And it's just like with, there's a point I'm just going to make, which I'm, is escaping me about. Oh yeah. So it's affecting my life now in ways that I never could have anticipated. Like, I just came from the US and I did a few podcasts there, Adam Carolla, Dr. Drew, Tim Pool. And I came back and first of all, I almost didn't make it back, by the way.
What do you mean you almost didn't make it back?
Like, I was at the airport and the rules are just so confusing, but basically on November 30th, or rather starting November 30th, unvaccinated people in Canada can no longer travel by air, train, or even many buses. They're just locked where they are. They can't travel internationally or within the borders on an airplane. And I had left like just the day before Biden's mandate kicked in for entry into the U.S. I think I got there like November 6th, and November 7th was the date starting which you had to be vaccinated to enter the U.S. And so I got there and there's a lot of convoluted information, a lot of specifics that we don't have to get into. But basically, you know, I did my trip. I was there for a few weeks. Then on my way back, I should have been able to get home from Washington, D.C. to Toronto to Vancouver. And from Washington to Toronto, I was fine because I'm a Canadian citizen. Otherwise, people who are not Canadian citizens who are unvaccinated are not able to enter the country. But if you're a Canadian citizen and you have a connecting flight, you can come in. But basically, I got to Toronto and then I had a flight to Vancouver. And it looks like I misread the COVID test rules. I had to do another COVID test, even though I'd done two that week already. But they were like, no, there's another one you have to do.
Yeah.
Makes no sense. There's so much I could say about it. And then on the airplane, by the way, I had my mask underneath my nose because I actually have a deviated septum. And I had really bad nasal congestion that day. Mm-hmm. And I never protest these things at all. Like, I just follow the rules. I don't mean to cause any other further issues or, you know, disturb any other employees who are just following rules or whatever. But then apparently somebody reported on me twice for having my mask underneath my nose. And then they gave me a notice saying that you are going to be reported to the federal authorities and they may pursue penalties, some sort of investigation on you. And you may no longer be able to fly on American Airlines for the crime of having my mask underneath my nose. And not to say like almost everybody on that flight's vaccinated, if not everybody except me.
On earth?
And everybody's tested negative for COVID, including myself. I don't have COVID. There's no, like, it makes no sense, right? And then once I got to Toronto, it was crazy. It was like I met this one. I had to rebook my flight and stay in Toronto for another night because I had to get my COVID test done. And then this one lady, the Air Canada employee, she was like, no, no, you can't go because you're not vaccinated. You can't go back home. Like, there's no chance. And then I went to another guy who was working there, and he was like, no, no, you can come. And they're like debating back and forth, and I'm about to miss my flight because they can't figure their shit out because these rules are so insane and ridiculous. And then finally, like the woman was like, I talked to this public health official at the airport and he's like, you can't go. But then this guy who was just like, I just so much like respect for him. Like he saved the day. He was on my side. He was like this guy is like having a hard time. He has to get home. And then he went and he had to beg the manager for Air Canada who was there. He went, he took another 15 minutes. Meanwhile, I was anxiously waiting, like, what the fuck is going on? And he had to beg the manager to let me on. And he told me, he's like, Rav, like, I just gave you a massive favor. If it wasn't for me, if I didn't beg to the manager to let you on this plane, you would have been stuck here. And so that was just like a divine intervention from God. You know, it was just crazy the way that happened. I almost didn't make that plane. I almost didn't get home. And if that guy wasn't there who saved my life in that case...
would not getting home be the worst thing? I'm like, man, I think I would have left Canada more than a year ago if I was from there.
Yeah, well, I'm still young. I'm still 20. I don't have the
financial
capital to move out at this point. And I couldn't have gotten home, I would have maybe like rented a car and drove home. Although, I mean, it's snowing and there's like horrible conditions in highways across the East Coast and the West Coast. So driving would have been extremely risky. And I wouldn't have gotten vaccinated because of this. I would have never submitted to that. I've never compromised my own medical decisions based on these draconian, tyrannical policies in place. Most likely, I would have just stayed and it would have costed me a hell of a lot of money. I would have had to borrow money from my dad, obviously. But anyways, that's just summarizing this insanity. And now there's more insanity. Now I'm locked down for 2 weeks here in Canada. Can't leave my house, even though I did just sort of I drove away 10 minutes, you know, to come here because my Wi-Fi wasn't working in my place. But I haven't been able to. I'm not, you know, risking it or anything. So I haven't been able to work out for 2 weeks, even though I've tested negative like three times since I've gotten here, by the way. But I still can't leave. I still can't do everything for 2 weeks, which is driving me insane. Especially like working out at a gym. It's been really frustrating.
I don't know how anyone still believes this is about health. I never did. Off the bat, I was like, nah, this ain't making sense. But like at this point, when I hear this stuff, I'm in the UK right now. I've been traveling a lot over the last few months. So I've actually been to seven different countries during this whole situation. And it's led to a lot of very interesting insights. But why do you think that Canada has been so ridiculous with it all? Because it's been one of the worst countries with this. It's probably not, maybe not the worst. You know, Australia, New Zealand, a couple spots in Europe are giving it a run for its money. But why do you think Canada has been so... Number one, why do you think it's been like that? And number two, would you have predicted that?
Well, first of all, our leader is a total moron. I don't know if there needs any other elaboration, but it's just...
but you guys vote for him, right?
Pardon?
But you guys vote for him.
Yeah, we do, because we're... we've been indoctrinated by this insane COVID regime, this liberal,
people need to stop calling it liberal, because this is the most illiberal thing. This is the most illiberal thing in the world. Honestly, I just correct people on that now. When people are like, oh yeah, it's super, I'm like, no, this is not liberal. Like, I'm the one being liberal here. Like, none of this is fascism. This is not liberalism.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm in university right now, and when we've been studying like liberalism, conservatism, and it's like what? This is liberalism? Like, why? Like, what the hell?
This is not liberalism. It's not even conservatism either. It's weird, because I'm like, this is like hyper illiberal, and sorry, this is very anti-liberal and very anti-conservative simultaneously. Like, this is actual, like, fascism by the proper definition, not the definition of, oh, this is just something I disagree with, so I'm going to call it fascist, but like actually fascist in terms of ultra high authoritarian levels of control by the state and direct cooperation and force between the state and private businesses, right? Like, you are forcing people to become a customer of a, right? You should not, your freedom and rights should never be dependent on you becoming a customer of any for-profit company, let alone one which makes stuff that you have to inject into your bloodstream. Like, that's not, that ain't liberalism. That ain't conservatism. Like, that's not how it's supposed to work. And, oh, which, by the way, your taxpayer money funded the creation of the product, which they're now mandating, and which is making a lot of very, very rich people very uber ultra rich. Like, the whole thing is just this tangled web of like the coordination between the government and big pharma and the media on this. I'm sure you've seen all the sponsored by Pfizer, right?
Like, not to you by Pfizer.
The whole thing, I'm just like, guys, like, what on earth is this, right? Like, if anything, it should be people on the left who are like super against this. Like, this this is like the most illiberal, most crony corporatism, like state, like public private sector alliance, just to like make billions and billions and billions of dollars all across the globe. And when you're talking to the stage of mandates, like, look, I'm a capitalist, like, I'm all for people selling products and services and making their money, but it would be the equivalent of me like mandating that, like, nobody in the country is allowed to sort of like have their basic rights and unless they buy my merchandise. Like, if you do not have an OK Dude t-shirt, then no, you can't go to the gym.
Yeah. If you're talking in terms of like health conditions, like, you could, this is a point that I made actually when talking about vaccine mandates on police departments and the dangers of doing that, especially given that homicide is on the rise and there are, like, in many police departments, like 5, 10, 15% of the department who are not vaccinated or reporting their vaccine status, and losing those officers on top of a historic homicide rise in places like Chicago, places like Austin, Texas just broke their homicide record. Philadelphia just did. Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. One of the points I made in that article for City Journal was like, we don't mandate people having like a healthy weight for police officers. Like, I've seen like overweight, fat police officers. Like, we would, like, that's your decision.
Another,
like,
problem. Yeah.
Like, and we don't mandate people supplement on vitamin D or zinc. And we know certain studies showing that, like,
no money in that, Rav. No money. Pardon? There's no money in that.
Yeah, exactly. There's no money in that. Right. But we don't mandate, like, our government doesn't operate on the basis of individual people living the healthiest lifestyles, right? We just don't do that because that is also, that in itself is also somewhat subjective. Like, like the Petersons follow the carnivore diet, and, you know, that's best for them. I follow a pescatarian diet, so just vegetables and seafood, no dairy. I do eggs, but no dairy, no red meat, no poultry.
Hmm? So you're saying people should be allowed to choose what goes in their body?
Yeah, like, if that's not like too, you know,
so you're anti, that must make you anti something.
Yeah, like, man, yeah, I mean,
I've been told I'm anti something because I think
people should
be able to choose what they eat and what medicines they take and so on.
Yeah.
Anti-science or
anti-food.
I don't know what.
I think the hysteria has just been like the Black Lives Matter hysteria, I think, was not as severe or as well. That was pretty bad too, the racial sort of reawakening across like from critical race theory to defund the police to all these different like movements that propped up. That was horrible, but this is like now it's like mandates, right? It's not just a social problem. With BLM it was definitely like property destruction in many cases and violence, but many of the problems and ramifications were social and political in nature. Now this is like actual like stuff you want to inject in your body. And I don't have the words to describe like how insane this is. Like, I just feel, you know, I've never really been like super political, like in high school or even like with BLM stuff. Like, I was always about like, okay, like super like common sense, like not red versus blue, not liberal versus conservative, more just like, okay, here are the ways we can reform the police and we can improve them. Here are ways that we shouldn't be, you know, disincentivizing them from doing their jobs, like very common sense, like nuanced stuff. And like with this, like all the nuance has been thrown away. And it's like when I talk to people, I feel like they think I'm Alex Jones. I feel like they think I'm insane, like saying common sense stuff. Like, it's just like, it feels like, am I the wrong one? Am I like mentally ill right now? Like, it's just like people look at you when you say, you know, like vaccines, like they don't stop transmission. Their efficacy is very short-lived, like a few months, like 7-8 months tops, you know, maybe a bit more in terms of stopping transmission. And like, here are the examples of 100% vaccinated hockey team, 40% of which just got, you know, COVID. Like, this isn't anything new. But it's just like people, it's like the mainstream media just kind of filters a certain kind of information. And so like when you talk to people about like myocarditis, for example, or menstrual bleeding in women after the vaccine, a lot of people just don't even know. Like, they're like, what? Like, no, it's safe and effective. It's safe and effective. Like, they just say that as some kind of like religious mantra, like safe and effective. But like, they don't know that there are real side effects here that have been studied, but they're just following like the mainstream media narrative that just says it's safe and effective and just close your eyes and get the shot. And if you develop an adverse reaction that has long-term consequences, then, you know, sorry, too bad. And reporting it sometimes can be difficult, and people don't take you seriously. They're, you know, vaccine companies are not liable for long-term damages and all these things. Like, it's just crazy what's happening right now.
It's crazy. And it's even crazier that people are feeling like they cannot talk about it openly. I'm not aware of any other medicine or medical procedure or intervention where it is considered taboo to talk about side effects. I can't think of one. Right? Any other medicine, any surgery, think of all the stuff that's out there, right? It's people talk about the negative side effects, right? Whether it's a birth control pill or an aspirin or an ibuprofen or any surgery, it's totally fair game to talk about potential downsides and potential risks. It's not only okay to talk about it, it's good to, it's ethical. If you're going to have a medical intervention or you're going to take anything, a basic tablet that's available over the counter, you should know what the side effects are. In fact, if it's advertised, they have to tell you what the potential side effects are. That's when you get those long disclaimers, either written or when they speak really fast. And that's why, because it's all about informed consent. That's like one of the most basic tenets of medicine. And I think something that's so strange is, I don't know, it seems like people have forgotten. It seems like people have forgotten stuff very, very quickly, right? Like, I think if you were to go back to 2019, if you were to go back 2 years ago, and you were to tell, say some of these people who you said have been attacking you or even disassociating themselves from you because, you know, you're not in favor of mandates or whatever it is. I believe if you were to tell these people, if you were to tell the 2019 version of themselves what they would be supporting in 2021, I think people would be disgusted with themselves. I think they'd be real. I don't think they'd even believe you. I think they'd be like, nah, like, come on, that doesn't make sense. That's not right. That's not fair. That's not ethical, right? And all of a sudden, people have become unpaid shills for Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, right? Like people are acting as if they're the acolytes, they're the apostles for these companies. I mean, which is great for these companies, man. I mean, such an enthusiastic fan base, but it's very weird, right? If you were to tell people, like, look, vaccination is not new. It's not new. What is new is the behavior, and like you said, this religiosity around all of it. Masks aren't new. Viruses aren't new. Diseases aren't new. Vaccines aren't new. We've had the flu. We've had colds. We've had all kinds of things our entire lives and way before that. But even again, even in 2019, if someone was like harassing you about your flu vac status, right? You'd be like, what are you even like? What a weird question. You go in a restaurant, they're like, have you had your flu vaccine? You'd be like, what on earth are you talking about? Like, what's wrong with you? Right? Or if someone was saying, oh, I uninvited someone from my wedding or from my party because they didn't get their flu shot this year. You'd be like, what are you even talking about? Right? And so all of this stuff has been normalized, which should never be, from lockdowns to masks to the vax mandates to all of this stuff and this whole culture that's been created about them. I'm like, guys, none of this is normal. Right? Like I'm like, this is not normal. Like this is very, very weird. Right? I've been around for a few decades. We never did any of this before. Right? Not because there was no disease or because no one ever infected anybody or nobody ever had a cough or a sneeze or was sick. We didn't do any of this. That whole story you were talking about getting back home from Canada, what? The whole thing is just mind-blowing, and the fact that it's happening in all these different countries and everything, it's so weird to me. It would be very funny if the consequences were not serious, right? Like if it were just like a big joke and it didn't really matter in the long term, then I would find the whole thing hilarious, and I always do make jokes about it. But at the same time, I'm like, yo, guys, this is serious, right? The precedents that are being set, even the concept of a lockdown. Right? If someone said lockdown to you in December 2019, you would have probably thought of like something in a prison when the prisoners get really rowdy and they lock down the prison. And now all these governments around the world now have this tool at their disposal. It's been normalized. This concept that you can just shut down the country, force peaceful citizens who are not guilty of any crime, just put them on house arrest, stop them going outside, stop them seeing their family. Stop them having Christmas or having Thanksgiving or whatever it is, and that they'll also actually do it. That to me is like crazy, because then they can just make up any emergency. They get, oh, climate emergency, lockdown. Oh, this emergency, lockdown. Oh, there's a new Delta, triple Omicron, triple plus variant, lockdown again, right? And because it's been allowed multiple times, it's easier for them to do it. It's just like it's a new trick that they have now. And I don't think people have thought about this long term.
I mean, to be honest, I was looking on Pfizer's website to see if they're hiring right now. I mean,
You don't want to work for the devil, man. Don't do it.
listen, hey, if Pfizer's hiring, man, I mean, that seems like
Don't
a
do it.
good
Don't do it, man. Don't
future
do it.
promising career in Pfizer. I mean, I feel like I could become a millionaire overnight by working for Pfizer. Pfizer, if you're watching, if you're looking for an intern or a guy who can write words pretty well, like I'll write about how safe and effective and
Don't do it. Don't do it.
hey, if
Safe
it's
and
for money, I'll
effective.
sell my
Look,
soul to the
man,
devil.
no, man. I'll employ you before that. Do you know something? Do you know something interesting I've noticed with all these little things is I've noticed that it's often 3-word phrases. I don't know if you've noticed that pattern.
Oh, okay.
Safe and effective,
Black Lives
stay at
Matter.
home, practice social distancing. Oh yeah, Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
Wash your hands, wear a mask, take the vaccine. Like it's these
Oh,
three
okay.
word. I wonder if there's something in the human psychology that makes like 3-word slogans or mottos like more memorable or repeatable. I've noticed through this whole thing, it's always three word commands, and I don't know if there's something to that. It could be random. But I've noticed that it's these 3-word things that people can just repeat and parrot and not really have to think about. They just repeat those 3-word phrases, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, with certain religions, like Eastern religions, there are like mantras. There's Om Namo Shivaya in Hinduism. I don't know if you've heard of that before. So I mean, it's a again the religion analogy. Like it is a really good one here. It's very apt because it's like you look at countries where, you know, it's a theocracy. It's religious fundamentalism dominates the government. And in that case, like, you have to follow this, you know, like in Islamic republics, it's like you have to follow this reading of the Quran and you have to follow this ideology. And if you don't, you know, then if you're gay, you're going to get thrown off a building. If you're a woman and you're, you know, dressing liberally, that's a crime. You know, same thing here. Like, it's very similar. Hello, like, pardon?
I said, hello, Iran.
Yeah, yeah. It's a similar way, like with a burqa, for example, like this garment that you wear, you know, over your head. You know, it's the mask is also like a religious thing now. Mm-hmm. It's like you know, you wear this to show your religious affiliations to the, you know, the making progress in the pandemic and eradicating COVID, which is just a mirage, by the way. People actually think, by the way, that through mask wearing and vaccination or any of these other interventions that you can actually just end COVID. It's like, no, that's not real, guys.
I know.
Stop thinking about this pure fiction.
It's bizarre because these are the people who think that they are pro-science. And they'd listen to us and be like, these guys are science deniers. These guys are anti-science. Meanwhile, they don't believe in natural immunity. They think you can spread a disease that you don't even have. They think that a random piece of cloth that's full of holes and gaps around the side is going to magically stop this. They think that the virus stops while you're eating and only attacks you in the entrance of restaurants. They think that you can catch it, they think you need to wear a mask while you're in your car by yourself or walking down the street outside alone. Like I've never seen so much anti-scientific nonsense masquerading as science. And it makes no sense. Even this whole thing, right? I mean, look, I've made the point before and I had a viral tweet where I said that everyone who's still afraid of COVID is fully vaccinated, which number one is true. But number two, this whole...
That's a good tweet.
Yeah, this whole idea that like unvaccinated people... Well, firstly, there's this whole conflation now of unvaccinated equaling diseased and infectious. But beyond that, this notion that unvaccinated people are like posing some huge lethal threat to vaccinated people. Like, what? Like, do you think it works or not? Right? Because that's the actual anti-vax position. Is because you're insinuating and strongly suggesting that the thing doesn't work. Because if it does, why would someone who's taken it be afraid of someone who hasn't, right? I've had the Rona. I've got very strong natural immunity. The notion that I should still be terrified of the virus itself, let alone just other people, is crazy, right? I'm like, well, I've got immunity. Even before I did, I wasn't afraid. But like, got immunity, so what am I, you know, why would I be running around trying to make things stricter and tougher and trying to force people to do this? And it doesn't even, it's like they're betraying their own point.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense at all. I'm at a loss of words for many of these issues. Like, I don't understand where people are getting this information from. You know, it's not just like we podcasters or bloggers or alternative media people are saying this. It's like, I interview people. I think you had on, did you have on Martin Kulldorff?
Yeah, Martin Kulldorff, yeah.
Yeah, great guy. Like he's common sense, like real, you know, actual objective information. I'm sure you guys talked about vaccine mandates and he's totally against it, right? Him and Jay Bhattacharya at Stanford. I don't know if you've talked to him before.
No, not yet. We follow each other, but I haven't spoken to him.
He's a great guy. I've interviewed him several times and you know, It's very interesting because I've had a very hard time publishing articles about COVID, by the way. Like, I've only published one article, and even like getting that was like so difficult.
They don't accept them?
They don't, and I am not going to jeopardize my career and name any of these.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to name the publications. I'm not wrap people up, but I'm just going to say, writing about COVID, even like in publications that were supposed to be like conservative or open-minded or open to free speech, are just like shutting out any dissent that's against mandates or talking about like myocarditis. So I've written like 3,000 words on myocarditis. I have like two articles. One is like a really long one about myocarditis. I've sent it so many places, they won't publish it. And there are places that I've gotten offers from, okay, like very right-wing places, but I'm just like, as an independent journalist, I'm not going to sacrifice my position as somebody who's independent. I'm not going to start writing. I love Ben Shapiro, and I've done his show, by the way, and the Daily Wire is great, but writing for the Daily Wire, like an offer that I've gotten, they take freelance work from anybody, if it's good and if it's of quality. But it's just like, for me as an independent writer, it's just like, I don't feel comfortable just writing for, an organization that, even though if I largely agree agree with many things that Ben Shapiro says and appreciate him and respect him and all that, but it's writing for something that's explicitly like Ben Shapiro says, this is a conservative organization. And all their hosts, they supported Trump, and that's their thing, and great, good on them. But it's writing for them, for me, I just don't like that as an independent journalist. I rather write for an outlet, whether it's left leaning.
You'd rather write for Pfizer.
I'd rather write for Pfizer and make $1 million, move to Los Angeles, move to a disintegrating city, and get a house right beside the homelessness crisis. That was crazy watching that in LA. I actually had a really good time in LA. It was interesting because, not to discount any of the crime issues, but it's I just had a really good time there. I loved it there because it was so novel for me, and I wasn't being robbed at gunpoint, which actually happened close by. In a place in, because I was in Venice. I don't know if you've been to Venice before. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really nice there. But apparently, there's certain areas that are really, really sketchy in Venice. Yeah. And I think it was just days after I was there, there was some robbery at gunpoint, and my friend, her house has been robbed when she was on vacation. And there's just so many issues with respect to just certain policies that are implemented, and forget unintended consequences. The intended consequences aren't even understood. If you decriminalize theft under whatever $900, this is the outcome that's going to happen. Do you not understand human behavior? But this is the sort of utopian thinking on the left, that they don't understand how human incentives work. They don't understand, if you tell the police that we're going to defund you and that you're racist and you're evil and white supremacist, that they're going to stop doing their jobs, they're going to pull back from proactive policing, and you're going to have a record number of officers that resign or leave the force and go on PTSD leave, and there's going to be a rise in crime and this shortage of police officers. All these things are predictable human behavior stuff, but it's just people on the left, they don't understand basic human psychology.
That's why with some of the people, especially the people in power, I believe that they're malicious. I don't give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't believe that these are people who don't know what they're doing. And I don't think this is incompetence. I think it's malice. I think that they know exactly what's going to happen if you defund the police. They know exactly. How can you not know what's going to happen if you make it basically legal to steal up to $900? Everyone, that's not incompetence to me. Incompetence is voting for people who do that. But I think that the people who do it know exactly what they are doing. I think that this is a controlled demolition of certain cities and certain aspects of society. That's my position. I'd love to give them the benefit of the doubt, but you can't do that for years on end as they continue to destroy a place. And it's sad. I think, I was in LA recently as well, twice. And I've described LA and California in general as a great city run by terrible people.
Right? Yeah.
LA is cool. LA has so many things going for it. Under the right leadership and governance, LA could easily still be one of the most desirable places to live in the entire world, not just in the USA. The weather is great. The scenery is great. You've got the beach. You've got all this space. There's so much creativity, and you've got a large, there's so much going for it, but it's just they're just running it into the ground. And it wasn't like that my whole life. LA's always had issues, but in the past decade, especially with the homelessness and the drug addiction, and then with all these policies that they're putting in place and all the stuff they're doing in the schools, all of this stuff, I'm just like, man, this is I'm convinced you're trying to drive people out of the city, and you're succeeding with it because the population is dropping. The California population has been growing my entire life, and finally it's dropping. When I was in Texas, every fourth or fifth person I met was from California, and most of them had moved in the past couple of years. Of course, you've got very high profile examples of that as well. Joe Rogan being probably one of the biggest ones, but it's happening en masse. And then as they go crazy with all the COVID policies and mandatory jabs for freaking 5-year-olds, all of that stuff, it's just
yeah.
But then it's also hard for me to feel sorry for it because they have an opportunity to change it. They had the recall election, and people overwhelmingly voted to keep Newsom in, And then I swear that the day after that was when he announced the whole vaccine mandates, right? And it's just like, okay, well, if this is, I don't understand it, but if this is what the majority of people want, I mean, this is the downsides of democracy, right? Where it's like, okay, so a lot of sane people who are hanging on in LA, some of them are staying and trying to fight it out, but a very large percentage of them are looking to leave.
Right. I'm just surprised. Like, I'm not surprised by the government in many ways. Like, they're gonna do what they're gonna do. They're financially compromised with all these investments, all these incentives from the pharmaceutical companies and big pharma and all these things. And they're gonna make decisions that are stupid, crappy, and in their own interests. But I'm just surprised there's no real like sort of revolutionary or like any kind of reaction from the people. Like Gavin Newsom should have lost by a long shot, and he didn't. He won. Like, it's like the government can only do what it does if the people let them. If the people decide enough is enough, Trudeau's a piece of shit who has no idea what he's doing. If they decide he's talking about like we need to make this into a Canada into a she covery and turn into she Canada. It's like I'm watching TV. I feel like I'm watching like a Dave Chappelle
gosh.
special, and it's like people don't care. Like, he can go around like photos of him in blackface from years ago. If people found photos of Trump in blackface, or like Ben Shapiro, like any
Dude,
conservative.
here's something funny. Have you noticed that not a single conservative I'm aware of has ever been caught like doing the blackface thing? It's always people on the left. It's always people on the left. It's always these like hyper woke, anti-racist, progressive types that it turns out some
Right.
point in their life they decided to.
Well,
I find that so funny. I find that so funny.
well, yeah. I mean, liberals are. I mean, not to fix it on this. Like, but liberals are more like open to experience. Like, if they want to, like try to feel what is it to be black, or what is it to be Indian? Like, do it. Hey, it's a wonderful life here, man. Like, you can. It's pretty chill here.
So funny, man. Yo, Rev, I know you've got a Substack out, so tell us what you've got planned with the Substack and for the next couple months and even the next year coming up.
Sure. Yeah. Briefly before I like get into a bit of it, have you done psychedelics before? Are you interested in that or no?
No, I'm very not into any type of drug at all. I don't drink alcohol. I've never smoked weed in my life,
Right.
never smoked a cigarette.
Yeah.
I'm very, very straight edge on all that.
Me too.
Okay. With exceptions.
Me too. Me too. Up until like 3 months ago.
Okay.
I mean, I just and I've been brought up that way with a very religious household, Sikh and Hindu. Like, my mom is more Hindu, my dad's more Sikh. Very religious upbringing. Say no to drugs. Drugs are bad, and I largely agree with that. I've never smoked weed. I do take, I do drink beer, which is great. I do like that, but I've never really done any recreational drug usage before. But something I guess happened in the pandemic. Maybe I've gone crazy potentially, and I'm deciding to. Take DM. No, I'm just kidding. I was gonna say DMT, but no, I'm not taking DMT yet. But I basically, I'm just a very spiritually curious person and interested in mystical experience, interested in like altered states of consciousness. And I started reading up on psychedelics and listening to Jordan Peterson's lectures on it, actually, which are fascinating. And also Sam Harris's stuff on psychedelics is really, really interesting. Like, he took MDMA and acid and mushrooms when he was like 19 and 20, and because of that, he was like so inspired by like the depths of the human mind that you just can't access in your ordinary waking consciousness, that based off of those profound revelatory experiences that he said showed him things like unconditional love, like total immersion into the present moment, which many people like they're just so lost in thought, they're just so like captured by their emotions and by political ideologies and all these external influences. And like just as his example, I think was very inspiring to me. Like, he tried psychedelics and it just opened this like gateway into the mind that was so profound that he ended up spending 10 years in India meditating for like 10 years for like 10, 5 hours, 8, 15 hours a day with Buddhist monks and like learning something about the human mind. And so I'm just very, I think I'm very
It's funny,
liberal.
but he still doesn't understand why people voted for Trump, eh? He's still got the TV on.
Well,
He needs more
yeah.
meditation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that it is what it is. I don't, you know, I don't agree with him on many things, but when it comes to
I
like,
know. I just find it strange. His,
yeah,
as someone who's so rational,
yeah.
I find that like, I don't get how after 5 years he still doesn't understand the other side of that equation, but I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, with psychedelics, I'm just, I guess I'm, like I was saying, I'm very liberal in that regard. I'm very open to experience. Like, I'm just such a curious person. Like, I just want to like travel and explore the world. And now in this case, now that I can't travel externally, like the way that I've the way that I've actually conceptualized my Substack is a travel blog exploring the depths of the human mind through meditation, spirituality, and psychedelics. And so I'm just so like curious about new experiences and about like changing your perception and having a better understanding of human nature. And just like, I feel like there's just, and this is a part of the conversation I had with Jordan Peterson earlier this year. And that podcast is going to be released on January 22nd, actually, by the way. I just heard his podcast I did with him. And we were talking about how there's not like, we're not accessing like mystical experience in the West. Like, that's just been lost within Christianity, within many religions. Like, people are just living like hyper secularized lifestyles. And you're Christian, right? Am I right?
I'm Christian, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right. And even like that, like there's like certain people just feel like this very profound like spiritual practices, like it's not happening enough within the church. And maybe in some churches it is, but there needs to be more of like this more spiritual grounding rather than just like reading the Bible every, you know, once a week or whatever, and just closing your eyes and then, you know, participating in politics and social media and not actually living a spiritually engaged life, which I think is very important. So the Substack that I've started is just based in this like hunger for mystical experience, this curiosity towards like, what is the human mind capable of? What is it that we're missing on? What are some of the core insights into the mind that can be gained through spirituality, through psychedelics, which are non-addictive and have an extremely strong safety profile if you do it in the right conditions? And I've actually never done psychedelics, by the way, which is interesting. But
Okay.
I've seeked out a trained guide. I highly recommend people don't self-experiment with this stuff. So, not based on my experience, but based on what responsible people have told me. Like, I've seeked out a therapist in Vancouver, and we're going to be doing some guided sessions with MDMA, first of all, where a lot of trauma can come up, and it's a very like long spiritual like sort of a cathartic process that I'm very interested in. So I'm going to be doing that and sort of like just sharing with the world, like
Perhaps
either.
you're promoting Molly on my podcast.
Right.
Took a quick turn.
We went from working looking for a job at Pfizer to take Molly. Hey, listen, I would, if I had to pick, I would promote universal psychedelic usage over universal vaccination.
Okay. I can't support either of these, but
Anyway,
I'm even
joke
opposed to
aside.
universal jacksonation, and I'm the man who coined the term.
Yeah, but anyway,
I know what you mean, Nathan.
jokes aside, the Substack, it's ravarora.substack.com. I don't know if you want to link to it below or whatever, but
Sure thing.
I'm going to be writing about, again, spirituality, meditation, just different parts of the human psyche that I'm just really curious about. And I'm going into this not knowing what to expect, really. Like, I'm going into this, who knows, I might be like, holy shit, like, my mom, you were right. MDMA was a big fucking mistake. Mom, those DMT monsters were fucking traumatizing. You were right. And then I'll end my Substack, and then I'll let go of all my subscribers. But hopefully this is going to be very profound and going to help me deepen my spiritual journey, so people can follow me there and follow the writing. And other than that, I'm gonna hopefully keep up to date with COVID and write about mandates and vaccine side effects, if publications will let me publish those articles, which is more and more of a
Well,
struggle.
if you can't throw them on Substack, man.
Yeah, I mean, the Substack was supposed to be focused just on spirituality and
Oh, okay.
meditation,
Well,
but
put them
I
on
mean,
either.
worst
Put them
case,
on something.
yeah, worst case scenario, I might have to integrate and just do that, but we'll see what happens.
No doubt, man. Rav, it's been great to have you on the show. Before we dip out, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, Twitter, RavRora1, RavRora1. Instagram, I keep private for my own sanity, so that's that. But Twitter is the way to go. And then obviously we got the new Substack. So I welcome all subscribers, people who are interested, who are even who are not inclined to any of these areas. I highly encourage you to to subscribe and just sort of, you know, see somebody in live time experiment and experience these very novel things and hopefully report back and provide insights to many of my readers.
Awesome, Rav. Real great to talk to you, man.
Thanks.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the grand, stunt me and destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.